So good morning. I'm Kate Tompkins. I am a youth and used to be kids pastor, but just got out of that in October, actually, and young adults pastor at a church called Upper Room Community Church in Vaughan. We meet at the Colossus Movie Theater. We also have a site in Bolton, and in the new year, we'll be planting another site in King, so lots of exciting changes happening at my church. So to start us off, this is a seminar. It's called Beyond Seeker Friendly. We're going to be talking about how do we disciple students from all different types of faith backgrounds and more so like different points in their faith journey towards Jesus. How do we disciple them in an effective way? But before we get into that, I kind of wanted to give you a little bit of a disclaimer to say that I'm not an expert in youth ministry. I didn't go to school for youth ministry. I've been in youth ministry for about 7 years, 4 of those years as a pastor. So really what this workshop is like me figuring out this process with you. So that being said, I welcome like your questions or your feedback, or if you have strategies or stuff that has fit, like you figured out that it works in your context, I would love to hear that and have you share your wisdom with the group, because I don't by any means think that I know all of the things about youth ministry or how to reach and disciple students. I think that there's a collective wisdom in this room that we can share. So there will be like a designated time at the end for questions. But if you have like a burning thought, feel free to put up your hand. And then when we get to a natural break, I'll call on you and you can like ask or share or whatever. But to start us off, I should probably tell you a bit about myself. I always forget to get a picture of myself, but you can see me, so that's okay. I've been married for 3 years to an awesome guy named Dave Tompkins. We met through church. Actually, his church and my church merged and became one, and like four different couples came out of that merger. So, God knew something needed to happen there to get these people to meet. Divine intervention. Otherwise, they wouldn't be married. So we've been married for 3 years. We live in North York, but as I said, I work at a church in Vaughan. He works in insurance over in Mississauga. And we love youth ministry. I have had a passion for youth since I was a youth. I struggled throughout a lot of my teen years and even into my young adult and late adult even years. I'm 31 now. With like depression and just feeling like I didn't really fit in. And so I always had a heart for wanting to help other people feel like they fit in and to minister to them. So God kind of took me on this whirlwind journey to bring me to where I am today as a pastor. And somewhere along the way, someone spoke truth into my life, or maybe a lie, but whatever, it was encouraging and said, Kate, I think you're a good public speaker. You should do it more. And so God's been giving me opportunities here and there to speak at conferences. And it's really like a, I don't know, like such a privilege, and I hope that I'm a good steward of your time and that you come out of here not feeling burdened or like, oh my gosh, I'm doing everything wrong, but actually inspired and hopeful for what God might want to keep doing through you in whatever ministry context you're in. So what I want you to do is, I'm sure maybe you're sitting beside one person you know, but if not, that's okay. I want you to turn to your elbow buddy, so the people in your row, and answer this question. Tell them about a time when you felt like really out of place somewhere. Okay, I'm going to give you like 2 minutes. Go. All right, you have 30 seconds to wrap up your discussion. All right. Does anyone want to share with the group their experience? Disclaimer, this is being recorded for future use. But does anyone want to share a story? Room full of strangers, you never want to share. Okay.
Just because somebody has to ball rolling. So my experience after thinking, when do I ever feel out of place? I'm like, typically not. And then I went back to my childhood. I went to an all-girls school in Toronto and really didn't belong there. I never felt like I belonged. All the kids there were really interested in what they were wearing and who their fathers and mothers were, and
Nice. So my own story is, honestly, if you want to, I think sometimes feeling out of place is a good thing and sometimes not a good thing, but if you want to ever feel out of place, all you need to do is travel to a country where you do not know the language or culture. So it's pretty easy, yeah. When I was about 22, I think, I traveled to South America, and I had learned Spanish in university, but somehow what you learn in a classroom doesn't always translate to real life, because I could read Spanish, and I could speak some of it, but then when you're in the midst of conversation and you have the pressure of needing to listen, translate in your brain because you're not good yet at like automatically knowing what they mean in a different language, and then trying to respond, you just end up, your like conversations take 5 times as long as you would ever want them to. And I was working with some teenagers in an orphanage, and they would talk to me, and I didn't understand the Bolivian accent yet. That's where I was in Bolivia. And so I would ask them like 3 or 4 times, like, como? Like, what? Can you say that again? And eventually they're just like, just forget about it, Kate. And I felt so out of place and just like, I want to understand, but like, I don't. And sometimes in church, youth or anyone really who doesn't have a church background can feel like that in our churches, where they come and like they want to understand. Not everyone is like, no, I don't care. Some are. We're going to talk about that. But they want to understand, and yet sometimes the words we use or the way we go about doing church ministry actually creates more of a barrier to people who want to come to God than it does create open space for them to come. So I think, over the past couple decades, maybe even more, I don't know how long this trend has been going on, but if you're in youth ministry, you might know of reports like the Hemorrhaging Faith Report. There's a new one that came out. The name keeps slipping my mind, but some people from Toronto or Canada actually did it. So Renegotiating Faith. Thank you. That's the other new one. And they all just talk about trends of why young people especially are leaving the church in like droves and droves and droves. And there's a lot of different reasons, but I think part of that is because actually we are offering something that they no longer seem interested in. And yet at the same time, what's interesting is we're coming into this time of youth and young adults that are actually like really spiritually hungry, that they really desire an encounter with God. And actually, they don't want us to just have simple explanations of stuff or make our sermon super easy and applicable. What they crave is an encounter with God. We're living in a time and ministering in a culture that desperately is seeking a spiritual encounter. And so we have a lot going for us in the church because we can offer that. And we offer the true way, the one way, the most legitimate and life-giving spiritual encounter a youth or young adult could ever have. So we're going to talk about how do we kind of take advantage of that and disciple kids no matter where they're at. But before we get into the nitty-gritty, the main thing, like if you remember one thing from this whole seminar that I want to share with you actually about how to minister and disciple youth is just to pray for them. There is an incredible power of prayer, and I feel like no one taught me that going into ministry. Like, I know I need to pray. It's like a Christian discipline that is in every Christian discipline book I've ever read. Like, our parents teach us to pray before meals or whatever. Like, prayer is a huge thing. If you don't go to a church and you don't, if you go to a church in, on a Sunday and you don't pray, you'd be like, something is wrong with this church. I don't pray here. And yet I feel like we don't actually feel this giant burden on us to pray for our youth or those in our midst, and especially to discern God's heart for them and then align ourselves with that. So there's this guy named Graham Cook. He's a Pentecostal theologian and pastor, and he says prayer in its simplest form is finding out what God wants us to do and then asking him to do it. And so what I want to encourage you to do, and if we have time at the end, I actually want to spend some time doing this just with us and with God, is to pray for your students, but especially students you don't even know exist yet. Students who maybe go to like a school nearby or are involved in sports clubs, and that God wants to touch their heart, and he wants to touch them through you or youth or leaders in your group, but you don't even know it yet. And you won't know it that you're supposed to be involved with them or go seek them out unless you listen to God and you ask him to show you, God, where are you leading me? What students are you calling me to disciple? the guy upstairs, I forget his name right now because my memory is really bad. I was one of those after midnight sleepers last night. But he talked about, like, know your role, right? So I think part of that is also saying, God, like, how do you want to expand my purview sometimes? And the way we can discern that is through prayer. And then we don't waste our time investing in stuff that we're not supposed to invest in. We invest in the things that God has directly told us that we're supposed to invest in. And so pray for your students. Pray for direction. Ask God to show you his will. Ask him to show you how to disciple students once they're there and they come to you with a crisis or they seem like they're not really interested in what you have to say. Because God loves to give wisdom to people who ask for it. So the two kind of aspects of ministry that we're going to talk about when it comes to discipling are these. We're going to talk about meeting and reaching outreach students, so students who don't yet know Jesus. We're going to talk about how can we get them, get to know them, and then get them to come to our youth group. And then we're also going to talk about how do I disciple students once I kind of already have some sort of relationship or rapport with them or they come to my youth group, wherever they're at, especially when they're at different points in the journey and I'm speaking to a large group and I feel like somehow I have to touch point on every single person with whatever different stage of faith they're in. So we're going to talk about some strategies on how to do that. So starting off, meeting and reaching outreach students. This is pretty straightforward, but relationships are the currency of pretty much everything in life. And so for all of this, the undergirding, the second thing that if you remember nothing else other than prayer and this is the second thing I hope you remember, is that relationships are what matter. That actually the best way to disciple students is not from a large group, it's one-on-one, two-on-one, in a small group. Just like, you know, Jesus did large sermons, and then he had 12, and then he had 3, and sometimes he did 1. And so we need to model our ministry the same way that Jesus did, through relationships. And so if you aren't someone who, and I struggle with this because I'm a type 3 on the Enneagram. Are any of you Enneagram fans out there? Yeah. I'm a 3 or 4. I can't figure out, but both are pretty strong in me. But type 3s are like task people. So I like to do the things, like hustle. I love to do the strategy and the nice program and have, you know, a nice polished talk and then, like, good questions. And I struggle sometimes with, like, the non-structural or systematic stuff. I'm, like, a trellis person all the way, which means I like to have, like, the system and the organization. But sometimes it's hard for me to be present because what I'm always thinking about is what's next. And God has said to me many times in my ministry journey, Kate, you need to slow down and just be present with people. You know, forget about, oh, the music is too loud and I need to go turn it down, or it's not loud enough, I need to turn it up, or, oh, the lights are, you know, like getting the mood perfect, or, oh, I need to have the perfectly curated PowerPoint. Like, things that really no one, people might admire about you, but they're not really going to remember you, and you're not going to impact their life through nice lighting or PowerPoint. Those things are fun. What's going to impact their life is if you have a relationship with them and you speak love and truth and belonging over them, you challenge them, and you walk alongside them through difficult stuff. So the way that we disciple students is through relationship. Programs are helpful. They are a trellis. But the way things grow and the way students grow is through relationship with us and our leaders. And if you're a youth pastor here, I just want you to know that, like, you're not alone in this, even if you don't have volunteers at the moment. We've struggled with that in our church. We have 50 youth, and last year we had 3 leaders. Like, it was really, really bad. This year we have 10. Like, God did amazing work in our church. But you're not alone in that. You don't have to carry this burden of discipling kids alone. You have your leaders there. But just want to remind you that it's about relationships, not about a perfectly curated program or a step-by-step program. So how we meet outreach students, the first thing we need to do is we need to go to them. And this is probably actually the hardest part for me in youth ministry, is like not doing ministry in my church. but actually going out into the community. And so when I meet, what I mean by go to them is I mean go to their schools. Like, do you go visit your students on their lunch hour and have lunch with them, and you're just like in the school community present? I know some schools are like not cool with that, so you've got to always talk to the administration there. But I feel like if you just introduce yourself, say, hey, I want to be a light in the school, I want to help out however I can, they would welcome you to help them. Like a free volunteer at a school, let's go, because parents are less and less volunteering for things at schools. So I would go to them, like, get involved. If you like sports, even if you don't know how to coach, like, offer to coach a sport. Sometimes they need sport coaches. Or, like, some schools will allow you to have, like, a Christian club at lunch. Or just, like I said, going to the cafeteria, meeting your students on campus, being visible in your community, going skating. So a couple weeks ago, our youth, I didn't go with them, but some of our youth and our leaders went skating at a public space. And it's just like, are you visible in the community? Are you a place where you might be accessible to people who don't yet know Jesus? Or are you always in your church running programs for church people who are already there? So we need to go out and be in our communities and get to know students. And I think the number one way you can do this is just offer your time and your talents. Even if you don't think you'll be the best at it, like, people are desperate for help and for older people to come in and mentor students at high schools, elementary schools, clubs, all this stuff. And so it's a really easy way for us to just get to know people, and they don't even have to know you're a youth leader or pastor. Eventually they'll know that, like, you could tell them, don't lie, but, like, you're not going there like, I'm coming here to save this basketball team or anything, but you're just going to build relationships and build friendships with students who then God might give you the opportunity to speak into their life. So one question you just need to ask yourself is, are you involved in your community, especially where your students are already at? You already have natural touch points, so schools, sports teams, that stuff. And then the second thing is bring them to you. So at our church over the past couple of years, we have really, really pushed our youth who already go to our church hard at creating a come and see type culture. And so we say, don't invite your friends, bring your friends to youth with you. Don't just say, hey, you should come sometime, and then your job's done, you did an invitation. Bring them along. And so we actually, before we start our youth year, plan a couple of strategic events throughout the year that are really, really easy invite things for our youth. Like last night, we had a Gaga Ball tournament, which is, if you don't know what that is, it's just like a pit, and you throw kids in with a ball, and they, like, smash each other. It's amazing! And they freaking love it. They love it. And they did not invite any of their friends, sadly. My tactic did not work last night, because I forgot to tell them until, like, the email I sent to their parents. But are there strategic events that you do where you are saying, we're doing this so that you can bring your friends, and you're not going to be, like, weirded out that maybe your friends are going to think you're weird because you're talking about Jesus all night, or, like, they have to sit in an hour-long Bible study? Like, it's a really easy yes. It is stuff like bowling nights, all-nighters are, like, huge, Christmas parties, you know, easy stuff that they can just invite their friends to, and they don't feel pressure, the spiritual pressure. And this is actually a spiritual experience, though, because what you are doing is you're saying to the youth, spirituality isn't just when we sit down and we talk about the Bible or God in a direct way all the time. We don't believe in the division of sacred and secular. We believe that all things are sacred. That any conversation actually has the potential to bring someone a step closer to God. Actually, many conversations do, and we don't even know it. And so we tell our youth, by inviting your friends, what you're doing is you're giving them, like, you know, count the kids in your youth group, you're giving them 50 or, like, 4 touch points with people who know Jesus. That's 4 opportunities they have to have conversations that bring them closer to God throughout the night. And so it's not just building into the students that you're inviting, but you're actually discipling your own students by saying, this is a value that we have. We want to be missional people who think about how we can invite our friends into what God is doing in our lives. So we go to them, but we also try to bring them to us. Any questions so far? Yes. Perfect. Yes. So, follow-up plans all the way. So there's a few strategies I've heard. You can do it kind of two ways. One is you can put the onus on you to follow up with those students, and I think there does need to be some degree of that. The second is you can use your students to put the onus on them to invite their friends back. So I think two things that you can do is, like, one is just have an easy way for students to respond. So I have some books up here, actually, but this one guy, his name's Jonathan McKee. This is one of his books. He talks about, like, when youth come to any experience they have, whether it's, like, more of a Sunday service style where there's worship speakers, small groups, or just fun, they will always have a sort of response card that asks for people's contact information and then says, like, do you want a follow-up? Like, do you want a leader to contact you and take you out for ice cream? And mostly if you put some sort of food in there, like, do you want someone to meet up with you for food? Everyone checks yes. So easy evangelism tool is just to follow up with them by saying, hey, do you want to go out for food with, like, a couple people? So I would say try to get their contact information, like, ASAP. And then B, usually people might come on their own, like, if their parent is new to the church and then they're making them go. But most students, like, this whole come and see thing, the students that you bring through this, they have come with someone that they already know. They've come with a friend. And so you can use that friend to say, hey, what did your friend think? Did they like it? And you work with that student to figure out ways that you can keep inviting them back. And I would also say that be prepared when you, if you're going to make a come and see culture, be prepared to have students there who aren't believers. Some sort of follow-up plan. So make sure a leader introduces themselves to them and, like, touches base with them and invites them back. Make sure their friend invites them back, and maybe even one other youth who says, hey, I'm so glad you were here. Will you come back? And actually, if you tell your youth, hey, I'm going to make you part of a welcome team, and you just get to be friendly to people, and then when new people come, I want you to invite them back, something like stirs up in them when they get this responsibility and they get excited about it, and it doesn't feel like a scary or onerous task to them. They just are super psyched to be able to reach out to other students and have responsibility. So those are my suggestions. So the goal with all of this, when you are trying to just get outreach students into your space, is to have them say at the end of the day, these are my people. So one thing actually that we're struggling with in our youth group right now is how do we be a really loving, accepting, belonging community? because we actually had a girl who was coming to our youth group and had a bit of a bad experience with some of the other girls, and she doesn't come anymore. And so some of the leaders have a good relationship with her, so we're still meeting with her and following up with her, and she's not, like, bitter about it, really, which is really good, but she doesn't really want to come because she just feels like no one pays attention to me when I'm there, and when they do talk to me, they roll their eyes right after because they don't like her. And I don't know why, to be honest. But so we have been really intentional about teaching our youth about community every year at the beginning of the year. It doesn't really matter when you do it. I don't think the timing is magical. But do you regularly speak to your students about the importance of this, your youth gathering, being a family? And a place where everyone should come, and the person who feels out of place at school would feel at place or at home here. And this all goes back to, will be a slide later, but you can teach about it up front, but often, like for us, we found with these particular girls that were being a bit mean, we need to just have some one-on-one or small group conversations with them and challenge them and say, you're leaders. You define the temperature of this group a lot. And so do you want to use that influence for good or for bad? Like, God has given you the path of life and the path of death. Like, which one do you really want to choose? And oftentimes when you phrase it like that, like, you're not saying, like, you're a bad kid, but you're just saying, hey, I believe in you. I see this potential in you. But, like, do you want to use this for good or for bad? Most of them will say that they want to use it for good. And you don't even have to, like, nag on them or discipline them. Like, the Holy Spirit will just convict them if you ask them a really good question and redirect them and make them rethink how they've been behaving. So this other guy, I think it was Jonathan McKee as well, in a book said he did that. There's, like, three guys in his youth group who were just, like, causing a ruckus all the time, and he did that to them, and then they flipped 180, like, almost instantly. And so it doesn't always happen like that for us. We've taken some of these girls out before and talked to them about their attitudes, and it's a bit more of a slow go, but if you just show them that you want to invest in them and that you love them, even when they're, you know, not being loving and showing belonging, they tend to, you know, respond. So our goal, yeah, is just to have people say, these are my people. This is a place where I want to be. And that has to do both with how your youth treat them, but also you as leaders and your relationships with them and how you love and see them. So I think the one thing that's keeping this girl, she still comes to our church, she just doesn't come to youth, is like the fact that youth leaders have encouraged her and built into her life and like sought her out and pursued her. So even though the youth aren't necessarily doing that right now, she still feels the love of God through some of the adults in the community. And if you don't have youth leaders that can do that, then maybe you need to think who your youth leaders are. But I feel like most youth leaders, like 99.9% would be like, yeah, there's someone who feels lost and out of place here. I want to meet with them. I want to help them know that they belong. That's why we do this. So then the next question, that kind of answers sort of some of the questions on how you get kids to come into your space or even just to meet you or your leader. It doesn't have to be you all the time, just reiterating. But then how do we, once they're there, once we have a relationship with them, how do we actually disciple them when they're at different points in their faith? So there are two approaches to this. One approach is in the large group setting, and the other approach is more in the small group setting. So our church is really passionate about being a safe place for people who are coming to God. We are passionate about removing barriers. We are passionate about being a church that unchurched people would feel like, yeah, this is my place, these are my people. And we kind of base all of this off of the story in Acts 15 where Paul and some other Christian leaders are kind of debating and fighting over this whole circumcision thing and, oh, should we force the Gentiles to be circumcised or not? And Paul says to them these things. He says, "It seemed good to the Holy Spirit and to us not to burden you with anything beyond the following requirements: to abstain from food sacrificed to idols, from blood, from the meat of strangled animals, and from sexual immorality. You will do well to avoid these things." And then he also says, "Is my judgment, therefore, that we should not make it difficult for the Gentiles who are turning to God?" And I think a lot of times in church, there's been this dichotomy between like seeker-friendly churches and like serious churches. And we think that seeker-friendly churches are all about like the exterior, the show, and that the other churches are like about theology and the Bible and like staying true to the gospel. And I think that is a false dichotomy, that we can be passionate about the truth and the sanctity of Scripture, about the truth of the gospel, and about reaching unchurched people. And we can do them both well. But like I said, I think this dichotomy has created is like program versus like discipleship, and it doesn't have to be that way. We can do good programs and we can have good discipleship. But the priority is relationship, you know? So, what Paul is kind of saying is that he wants to remove any barriers that might stop people who want to turn to God from turning to them. So what does that actually look like in our large group context at youth group? Like, if you are leading, you know, worship, sermon, small group style nights, what does that look like? And I think there's a few key things. The one is that our youth nights need to have a balance of fun and depth. And like, once again, to get rid of this dichotomy that we can't have depth if we're having fun, or that we can't have fun if we're having depth. We can. Actually, guys in particular learn best and relate to one another best, not when they're like having a face-to-face conversation, but like when they're doing stuff side by side. And actually, I'm a bit like that too. I have brothers, so I just, you know, did whatever they did. I have three brothers. So I think there's like this value in saying the deep spiritual conversation is beneficial, but also, do we have games or like fun things that can break the ice? Are we laughing together? One of my youth leaders, he's new this year, and he's like, he's so good. I'm like, where have you been our whole youth ministry life? He's just naturally just like dove into youth ministry. And he said something to me when he first started that I was like, I don't know, like something exploded in my brain. I was like, how have I never thought about this before? He said, you know, if I can get the youth to laugh at me while I'm laughing at myself, I know it's been a good night. And at first I was like, wait, what? And he was like, because if they're laughing at me, then, like, and they know that that's okay, then they know I'm a safe person. And then I don't take myself so seriously that they, like, couldn't slip up or say something weird around me, you know? Laughter is the way we bond. And so do we have ways for us in the large group context to laugh with each other as well as have spiritual talks, to preach, to have deep conversation? And actually, are there ways we can do those in tandem? So, like, you know, icebreaker questions, then a serious question, then maybe like a lighter question in small group, that kind of stuff. If you're having like a really serious and heavy talk, are there some points where you could just like break the ice a little bit or just acknowledge, like, I know this might be heavy, like, you know, that's all. Take a deep breath. It's okay. You know, no one's going to die. It's all right. Just little things that you can say to break the ice and help people feel comfortable. Another thing is, are we just aware of the language that we use? And so I'm not saying that we dumb stuff down and, like, don't say theological terms that describe things perfectly, because there's no way actually it could be described perfectly. Like, how do you describe the Trinity other than with the word Trinity? It's really, really hard. There's actually a really funny video about it, because the real explanation is, like, really long and complicated. But when we use theological terms that people in the church, like people who have not grown up in church, not heard these terms before, especially young people, that they probably wouldn't understand, like transubstantiation, is that even how you say it? Sanctification, even like sometimes words like redemption, reconciliation, grace, the gospel, like youth don't always know what these mean. And so can we do little tidbits of interpretation? I'm not saying you have to explain, you know, the Trinity all the time, but are you trying to just simplify the language? Are you trying to use words that they would use so that they can understand it? Just translate a little bit so that the language you use isn't a barrier. I mean, if it happens sometimes, I think it's okay, because then they'll hopefully go to small group or be able to come up to you and say, I have no idea what that word meant or what you're talking about. Can you explain it to me? But do we try to interpret ourselves a lot of the time? Because especially if you've been to Bible college and you know all the big words, sometimes we like to like show our big wordiness, or like the Greek word or the Hebrew word. And like, honestly, that is helpful sometimes, because English just doesn't cut it all the time. But are we doing it in a way that's not trying to like show how smart we are, but actually help them understand things better? And so I just basically, instead of saying the word sanctification, I've just said, like, life change, inner transformation. Like, those are words they would more use. And then I might say, and the Christian, what we call that in the church is this word called sanctification. So it's not that you can't use it, but just are you like, giving them some on-ramps to understand what this language means? The last thing I would say is find out what your youth really want to know. Like, what are they struggling with? What topics are they really wrestling through? Or what are they craving to know because they want to help their friends out with it? But also, what are things they don't want you to preach on because it's going to really cut to the heart of them? And they would never tell you they need to hear it, but you know they need to hear it. So some of the things that we have done in our youth group is, every year I ask them, what do you want to hear me preach about? Like, what do you want to know? And it's almost always the same. Sex, dealing with temptation, friendships and conflict, dealing with my parents. There was one other that I, depression and suicide and anxiety. Like, those are probably the top five things that they always want to hear about. But you can just ask them, and they will usually lovingly just be like, all these things. They have no shortage of things they want to hear about. But the other thing is, ask your youth leaders, what comes up in small group time? What comes up in your one-on-one conversations? What do you feel like our youth are struggling with and they need to hear? Because then through the large group time, you'll know that you're at least hitting, you know, a few of them with stuff that they want to hear, that they're going through right now, and that is easily applicable to them. So then we have small group time. So really, I don't have a lot to say about this other than, are you training your leaders to make small groups a safe space for students? So I was like shook a couple weeks ago, because we went to this conference called Change Conference at the Church on the Queensway. And one of our youth, at the end of the conference, she was driving home with one of our youth leaders, and she was so proud of herself. She said, "I'm so proud of myself. Like, I had my filter on all weekend." And I was like, "What? Like, on all your photos? What are you talking about?" No, what she meant is she had her Christian filter on all weekend. So she was like her Christian self the whole weekend instead of just who she is. And I was like, dang, what have we done that we have created this space where our youth feel like they have to have a Christian filter on all the time? Like, I want them to feel like they can be themselves. And so in small group especially, I feel like what that means is telling your youth leaders, don't be surprised. Like, whatever they share, be like, oh. Like, practice your not shocked face. I tell this to parents too. Like, don't freak out. It'll be okay. You know, if they drop an F-bomb, you're like, great. Maybe we can, you know. Like, I think there's some things you could be like, hey, dude. You know, that's crossing the line. Like, anywhere, school doesn't matter. That would not be okay. But can we be a place where we're not going to, like, hop on them and be like, duh, you can't say that. Or like, dude, no, I struggle with this. Like, especially when my youth make fun of each other. And it gets to a point where it's, like, becoming hurtful. Oh, the rage gate comes out. It does. I hop on that, man. And I think I just don't do it. I need to learn to do it in a way that's safer for them. That shows them, I don't like this. I want this to change in you, not just for that person, but for you. But also, like, I need to, you know, work out my own stuff and deal with that in a way that is helps them feel safe and loved. Because my tendency is just to be like, you can't say that. Stop saying that. That's horrible. And they're like, well, I'm just not going to speak my mind around Kate anymore because then she'll, like, jump on me and get mad. So can we create safe spaces for them? And I think another part of that is upfront being clear about what confidentiality means. So in youth group, what are you legally supposed to share if they tell you, and what are you not, you don't have to share? So stuff like legally that you have to share is if they're going to bring harm to themselves or to another, or like if they're doing something illegal. But there's some gray areas, you know, of stuff that you're like, well, I want to tell your parents this, but technically this is a confidential space. And so I can talk through it and disciple you through that, but it's not necessarily something you have to tell their parents. And your youth pastor will be able to tell you what those exact things are. It's different. Some churches are different than others, so I don't have a blanket statement other than the typical psychologist/teacher stuff about, you know, harm to self, others, and illegal things. But like a gray area that I think has come up in our church a lot is like, what do we do if we find out like a youth is like sleeping with their boyfriend in grade 12? It's not illegal, but it's not morally right. Like, do we talk to their parents about that? Their parents would want to know. They've told us that. But like, how do we model this, create safe space and model this confidentiality and honor and create trust in those relationships with them? So I don't have the answers for you. I have the answers for my youth leaders, so youth pastors, sorry to put that on you, but it's really good to teach your leaders what are the boundaries of confidentiality, and make sure your youth know that. And then make sure that once you've told them what it is, you stick to that, like if your life depended on it. Because when you break trust with young people, oh man, it's hard to earn it back. And I learned that the hard way. I broke trust, like, not even on purpose, with a youth who was, like, depressed and suicidal, and I told their parent without talking to them about it first, and they were just like, what the heck? And we're okay now, but I had, like, huge guilt after that. I was like, why didn't I talk to them first before I went to their parent and intervened? Like, I panicked. And so, are we creating safe spaces and, like, building trust with them? All right. So the next thing in discipleship is really the only way to disciple people effectively is to know where they're at and where they need to get to. So one of the things that has come out of these books, there's many different methods that different people have for this. This is not my paradigm. I didn't make this up. I took it from a book. But Like I said, this guy named Jonathan McKee, he has this thing where he does 6 levels. Those are the ones I'm going to take you through today. But there's other people. Duffy Robbins has a 6-level thing as well. And this guy named Dan Spader has, he calls it 4 chairs, like 4 different chairs people could sit in their face. And how to move people from one stage to the next. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a framework from Jonathan McKee's stuff because I found his to be the most helpful for me. But if you want to come take a picture of these books and read them later, you're more than welcome to. But we need to just know where they're at, and then we know how to help them to move forward. So there are kind of 6 different stages that Jonathan McKee in his book Connect, and also this book Ministry by Teenagers, talks about. The first one is the no way kid. This is a kid that, like, you will never find in church. Maybe they don't even believe in God. They're just like, no way. Like, if you were to talk to them about God, they're like, peace, nope. They don't want to hear about it. They're not interested. They don't really care at all. There's other kids who they're not necessarily like opposed to it, but they're just not interested. They're apathetic. They're like, yeah, God might exist, but like, I don't really want to go to church or have any interest in building a relationship with him. I'm just not interested in that. And then there's checking things out kids. These are the kids that are like, yeah, I'd come to church if you invited me, and like, I'll learn and sit, and I'm a bit curious, but I haven't made a decision to follow Jesus yet. I'm just kind of like here, and I'm showing up, and I'm checking it out. And all 3 of these types of kids are outreach kids. So they're kids that are not followers of Jesus yet. And then there's 3 types of kids that are disciples or followers of Jesus. There's the stagnant kids. So I would say, like, in youth groups, this is huge. These are kids who often have come to church their whole lives. It was their parents' faith. They kind of maybe had like I want to follow Jesus moment, but then nothing really happened. And they're just like going through the motions. Maybe they have their Christian filter on all the time. But they're not really like, either because they don't know how or they don't want to, they're not growing in their faith for whatever reason. So they have become stagnant. Then there's growing kids. These are kids that do want to grow, and they're trying to learn. They're reading their Bible. They're experimenting with spiritual disciplines. Maybe they're involved in volunteering in different areas, but they have spiritual hunger, and they want to grow in their faith. And then the last type is looking for ministry kids. So these would be your student leaders or kids who, like, lead other kids. So we have a couple kids in our senior high group who are like, I want to lead the junior highs and, like, show them and talk to them about faith. And they're looking for ministry. They're looking for opportunities to share their faith, to serve, and to grow in deeper and deeper and deeper ways. So like I said, these are all discipleship kids. So I'm going to talk you through how to, like, what is the goal once we've identified where our students are? How do we get them to kind of, like, the next step of their faith? But the thing that undergirds all of this, once again, is the best way to figure this out is one-on-one. So if you're sitting here and you're like, I don't even know where this kid in my youth group is at, take them out for pizza or burgers or ice cream or for, video game night. Don't go to a movie because you can't talk. Movies are the worst youth ministry strategy. Whoever thought of that? But take them out, and I feel like just even if you don't ask them directly, because they probably don't even know sometimes where they're at, they might. But, like, if you just ask a couple questions, how's your relationship with Jesus lately? Or, like, you know, do you enjoy coming to church? Why do you come to youth? You can find out slowly where they're at. And I would say that if you're, like, doing the whole outreach or going there to their schools and they're not yet part of their ministry, you could assume maybe they're in the not interested or kind of checking things out or what's the other one? No way phase. But there will be small things that they say that will kind of help you figure out where they're at. So, like, oh, you would never catch me in church. Probably a no way kid. Like, oh, you're a pastor? Pfft, I would never go to church. Like, and they might say things that you're like, you know, they're trying to, like, trigger you. You're just like, oh, not shocked. Cool. For the not interested kid, they might be like, oh, yeah, I believe in God and stuff, but, like, I don't feel a need to go to church or whatever. Those are, like, these are tagline things they might say. For the checking things out kid, they might be like, oh, cool, like, I would love to come check it out sometime. Like, I'm not, you know, spiritual, I'm not religious or anything, but, like, I'd be willing to come. And then stagnant kids are the hardest to figure out. Okay, because they, especially if they've grown up in kids, they know all the things to say. They know exactly the Christianese answer to tell you to every question. And so you just got to use your discernment to know, are they speaking from their heart or are they speaking because they think that's what I want to hear? And usually, like, it's pretty, like, it seems hard, but I feel like in your spirit, you'll just, there's something that goes off and you'll just know. And if you don't know, go back to step one, pray, ask God for discernment. Or you can ask them, because sometimes they might tell you. And we did this actually at our youth group a couple weeks ago. I preached on Revelation 3, the whole lukewarm passage, and I, like, blasted them. A couple parents wrote me after. But I just said, like, where are you at? Like, are you cold or are you hot or are you neither? Because, like, we just, you know, where are you? You need to figure it out. And then in their small groups, they shared. And some of them literally, like, it breaks my heart to say this. But they were like, yeah, I'm here and, like, I go to church, but I just don't, like, yeah. I don't care. I was like, what? I figured out in like 2 weeks ago that 75% of our youth group is in this stagnant stage. And I'm like, dude, we got work to do. I got to pray every day for 5 hours because this is bad. Don't panic, though. I think most youth groups are probably like that, to be honest. But you just got to use some discernment to figure out where these, you know, if kids are stagnant or not. Sometimes they'll say certain things that you're like, oh, like, I have my Christian filter on. Maybe they're a stagnant kid. Who knows? While I keep talking, think of other things they might say. Growing and looking for ministry kids are usually pretty easy to detect because they're like, you know, they ask questions. They think through things. They maybe don't give the token response in small group, but they're actually thinking through things and how it relates to their personal experience. They might ask you for opportunities to serve or to grow or, like, hey, do you have book recommendations? They tend to be a bit more hungry and, like, asking you for this dumb mic, advice and, like, ways that they can grow. So those are easier to detect. But like I said, you can try to do this through large group or small group stuff, but the most effective way is always one-on-one. People are just way more honest, and they won't put on the mask that they wear when their friends are around and they're trying to impress them if it's, you know, just with you. And sometimes, I think in youth ministry, we shy away from one-on-one because this whole, like, plan to protect, safe place stuff. So there are ways around that. Not that we're not going to respect safe place. We need to, or plan to protect. We call it safe place at my church. But the ways around this is, I think, to see Plan to Protect and Safe Place as like a framework that we want to use to hold us to keep us accountable. So what you could do is, like, our church policy allows us to go out one-on-one in a public space. So if it's like a coffee shop or where there's lots of other people around in public, we could do that. Or if you want to set up a one-on-one at the same time that another leader is going for a one-on-one and you go to the same coffee shop, then there's leader accountability there with someone that's not total strangers in public. We get parents to drive them there. We don't necessarily pick them up, so you're not alone in the car with them. Like, there's just lots of ways that you could figure it out. So if you need advice or want tips on that, please come talk to me after. So now we're going to go quickly into how do we help kids move. So we've talked about the large group stuff. This is more in one-on-one context. So the no way and not interested kids are actually, you use the same kind of approach. Your goal with them is to move them towards checking things out. And honestly, like I've said, this, you're going to hate me after this because I just say the same thing over and over. But the way to do this is to build a relationship with them. And once they get to know you and see that you're chill and that you're not going to smash Jesus in their face, and you actually embody, without even knowing it sometimes, who God is to them, they tend to be, you know, warmer towards the idea of going to church. And this one guy, I think in this Connects book by Jonathan McKee, he says that he's had a pastor who, anytime he's had, built a relationship with the youth over time, who's no way or not interested in inviting them to church, never once have they said no. Why? Because they trust him and they love him and they know that he is looking out for them. And so if he's going to invite them to something, then why wouldn't I go? Because I like him and I trust him. So if you have a relationship with kids, then getting no way and not interested kids actually to come to your program or to, like, even sit one-on-one with you and say, hey, would you be willing to, like, look at a Bible passage with me, is actually really easy. It seems scary and hard, but it's much easier than you would think. The main recommendation I have for kids in this category is not to argue with them, though. Like, especially with No Way kids, they might be tempted, or you might be tempted, to, like, tell you all the reasons why they disagree with, like, God doesn't exist, and this, and evolution, and, like, well, what about this, and life after death can't be real, and whatever ever excuses they might have. But really, always behind that is you'll meet very, very, very few people who actually, without a doubt, do not believe that there is a God. Most people do. The reason why most people say they don't believe in a God is because they don't want their life to change. And so Lee Strobel actually says this. He was an atheist for a long time, tried to disprove it, ended up finding out he couldn't, became a Christian. And he said, I always, in the back of my mind, knew that God existed. But I knew also that if I admitted that to myself, it would require something of me, and I didn't want that to happen. So I just denied his existence. So even when youth come and they present with this, like, argument against it, really their fear is that my life's going to change, God's going to require something of me, and I'm not ready to admit that yet. And so can we just, you know, gently and patiently walk through that with them and not feel the need to convince them of all our fancy arguments? The checking things out and stagnant kids are actually the same, because even if kids have grown up in church, stagnant kids are still kids who need to be convinced that, like, Jesus is really someone worth giving your life to again, wholeheartedly, to surrender yourself to. And so what they need is a place to belong. They need a community where there are people who are growing in their faith who can model it to them. They need their questions answered. They need to be challenged sometimes, and they need to have the gospel shared with them. We think sometimes that kids, especially stagnant kids who have never, you know, have gone to church their whole lives, that they probably know the gospel, but, you know, they just sometimes need it told to them in a fresh, new way, or just again. And more than anything else, I would say with these kids, not more than any other type, but, like, just keep praying. Especially for the stagnant ones, because sometimes we can get cynical about it and we can lose hope, but God can work in their lives, and he can use, like, seemingly whatever mundane, mean nothing to you moments to somehow bring them to him. There's a story in a book, I think it's this Connect book again, this is my favorite book on this topic, so you should all read it, where Jonathan said there's a story of a pastor who, like, Their students were in a response time at their church, and one student was, like, there with his head in his hands, and the pastor was standing there, and he's like, oh, like, what do I do for this kid? He seems upset, but, like, I don't know what to do. And he just panicked, and he just went and put his hand on his shoulder, and he said, I'm here. And then he left. And he's like, oh, what the, I just totally messed that up. Like, what did I do? And then a couple weeks later, this kid's mom emailed him, and she was emailing him about, like, details for a youth event, and then she said, oh, by the way, thank you for what you did for Johnny. And the pastor wrote her back, and he's like, wait, what do you, like, what did I do? What do you mean? She said, well, that night at youth, he was sitting there praying, God, if you're real, just tell me that you're here. Like, just, I just need to know. She's like, and you went and you put your hand on him, and you said, I'm here. And he's like, I knew God was real in that moment. Like, who, he, like, thought he messed up so bad. He's like, oh, I just made a fool of myself. And God used that to speak to this kid. So I'm like, oh, I want that to happen. Like, use me to help students know that you're here, God. Like, I'll mess up all the time if students know that you exist because I messed up, like, or think I messed up. He didn't actually. So, you know, just keep persevering and praying and trusting that God could use something as small, like, that you thought was stupid, but actually use it to show people who he is. And then once again, take them out one-on-one. And I think especially checking things out in stagnant kids, sometimes they need to know, like, that there is a decision that needs to be made. Sometimes the problem with in our church that we found is people are walking around and, like, they're like, yeah, I believe in God and I'm favorable towards him, but they don't actually know that there's, like, they need to give their life. You know, there's, like, a clear kind of turning point. And so sometimes we just have to communicate that to students, and they're like, oh, now I've gone from checking things out to bought in because I made a decision. And no one told me I needed even to do that. So are we telling them that as well? And then the last thing is growing. Oh, so the goal with those students is to move them towards growing faith. I hope that was clear. And then growing and looking for ministry students, our goal with them is to give them more and more opportunities to grow, to learn, to discover their gifts, and to serve. So these are students that you want to invest actually a lot of one-on-one time in. You want to help them discover what they're gifted in. You want to call these things out in them and give them this book called Growing Young, calls it The Keys to Your Church. Like the keys to get in if no one else was there. So we have one grade 12 in our church who, she can get into the church as much as I can. She has the master key. Because she's just demonstrated that she wants to grow. She wants ministry. She's in charge of one of our kids' ministry programs in grade 12. Like, this girl is crazy. Amazing. And so we have just given her responsibility and authority because she wants to grow and she's demonstrated a desire, a hunger. So are we giving youth opportunities? Are we letting them grow in the ways they want to? Are we giving them our time and attention? Because if we don't, then they will look for growth or look for answers elsewhere instead of from us. But if we invest in them and we encourage them and we build into them, they will remember that for the rest of their lives. Like, I'm only a pastor because my youth pastor, when I was in university, he did not even know me because he came in right when I left to go to university. Took me out one-on-one, asked me what I was good at, said, you should come intern at the church for a year, unpaid. I said, no way, dude. Then a year later, I went back and I said, okay, now I'm ready, and now I'm a youth pastor. Because he saw the smallest desire, the smallest passion in me, the smallest desire to grow, and said, I want you to do something here. And then now I'm a youth pastor, thanks to him. So build into them, recognize their gifts, empower them to serve. And don't forget to pray. Literally the most important thing. I talk for too long. So I'll pray for you, and then we'll have some Q&A stuff. I'm not like a huge social media poster, but if you have any desire to contact me, Instagram, email, best ways. I love to talk about youth ministry and stuff. So if you want to meet up or hang out, I'll love to hang out with you one-on-one. Or with a group of you. That's cool, too. Let me pray for you. Jesus, what a privilege it is to be able to be witnesses to what you're doing in the lives of youth and actually get to feel like, not feel, to get to take part of it. Actually, in some ways, to like take partial credit for things, that you actually give us the power to be involved in youth lives and get to say, oh, I was there for that. I got to be a part of that. That is one of the most exhilarating and life-giving things I've ever experienced. And so, Father, I pray over each person in this room that they would just feel excited and encouraged and inspired, hopefully, about the opportunities that await them to disciple youth of different backgrounds. I pray for boldness and for courage and for perseverance for all of us, God, because youth ministry is a really, really, really long game. I've only been in, like, paid ministry 4 years, and it's already like, oh, come on, God, where's the fruit? And yet you are faithful. So I pray, Father, that you would just remind us all that you are faithful to do what you have said you will do. And may you help us create spaces in our lives to allow you to just speak into us and to tell us what that is. Would you help us to discern your will? Would you give us wisdom as we disciple and walk along students, some who are not interested and don't care, some who are wrestling with really, really deep and dark and heavy things, and some who are eager just to, like, fly the coop and soar independently. Would you show us how to attend to each of their needs with wisdom and with grace? But more than anything, to know that the burden of convincing people, that's not actually a thing. That the burden of, you know, making all of these students follow you, that's not a thing, God. That's your job, your responsibility to convict and to grow. What we do is plant seeds and we water and we let you do the rest. And so I pray, Father, that this would be like a joy and a delight for us and not a burden. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.